You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you are interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support. This movie review also comes for subscribers at Time Lord level or above, an uncut, unedited, longer video version of the review. Become a subscriber and check it out.
Can you feel it? 2020's gone. Everything's great now. It's 2021. Nothing's going wrong in the world. It feels great outside. There's nothing going on with like politics. Things are just going to get so much better. And like all the new movies are going to start coming out. The virus is going to go away here soon. And don't you know it? Here at Screener Squad, we finally get to see like a really happy, just happy-go-lucky movie right out of the gates to start the year off right. And what do we get to watch? We get to watch Pieces of a Woman. The world's on fire. It's really bad right now. Jesus Christ, never mind. This was a really intense movie, guys. I'm Wright Sulek. Today we're talking about Pieces of a Woman, directed by Cornel Mundrutsko and Kata Weber. I'm really bad with names. It's terrible. But anyway, they're actually a Hungarian partnership, writer and directors, and they actually directed a movie that I really loved a few years back called White God, about basically... It's like Homeward Bound, but Braveheart.
Yeah, it's like a dog revolution against a town. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing, but it's done very straight.
The animals don't talk either.
The animals don't talk, but it is seriously about a dog revolution and a girl that is hopefully going to, you know, basically make peace with the dogs. It's great. But also today we're talking about Pieces of a Woman, though, starring Vanessa Kirby, Shia LaBeouf, and Ellen Bernstein. And Vanessa Kirby, she got a lot of praise for this movie because she won Best Actress at the Venice Film Festival earlier last year in 2020. And so I've been really excited to see this movie, but I know there's a few other people on this review today that are very excited about watching and talking about this movie. So today I have with me Bradley.
Hello.
I have Alex.
Hi there.
And I have Gina. Right out of the gates, it's about a couple, Shia LaBeouf and Vanessa Kirby. They play Martha and Sean. And Martha she's pregnant. She's actually about to go into labor. And seriously, what's really cool that this movie does right out of the gates, it really takes its time with certain scenes. And the first, seriously, 20 minutes of the movie is one shot. And it's both of them at home. And she starts getting contractions. And of course, this is, I guess, the famous labor scene. And I really want to talk about this and, of course, the rest of the story. But this first scene is really one of the most intense scenes I've seen in a long time in any movie. So I was, you know, sitting at home. It was a Saturday like morning. I was watching this, like, I'll watch this real quick. No big deal. Just like I just woke up and I'm like, yeah, I know what I'm in for. And I'm just like at the edge of my seat, just like, Jesus Christ, this is the most crazy thing. So what did you guys think about Pieces of a Woman and also this first scene, the labor scene?
I've been a part of labor scenes myself 8 times. And very accurate, the discomfort, the water breaking, being a gruesome, disgusting mess. Like, I imagined other people watching this that haven't seen labor thinking right away, oh my gosh, something's wrong, when really it was going smoothly and correctly how it should be going. So that's pretty cool.
I was blissfully ignorant and just could not sit still on the couch throughout the entire sequence.
This actually wasn't intense for me. I mean, it was, I would say this definitely, this film has actually made me rethink whether I want to have children. And not because of the pain, but because of what we really sacrifice to bring life into this world. I was amazed and happy that they showed the labor, especially because, as many film buffs know, it was quite like taboo to show labor on screen. Like the pre-production codes didn't allow for them to show labor. That's why you don't see labor in a lot of films, or if you see labor, it's edited and stuff. But it was nice to see this because of Vanessa's amazing acting. And it was great to see her kind of straddle the line of when you're a first-time mom and you're excited to have a child till it's time to have that child, okay?
Yeah.
And the pain, okay, is ridiculous. And that entire scene was intense because of just how they paced the scene, how they shot the scene,
yeah,
and how it was really just them two. Like, they really held, between Shy and Vanessa, they really held the screen. Like, I was totally immersed in it, hoping that everything would go all right. And to me, it just set the tone for the entire movie. And it was a really well shot scene. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it was pretty intense for me. It was an emotional, it was very emotional for me, actually, because I cried like multiple times in that scene. Because it really brought up just, you know, how much of yourself changes, but also how much of your body heals. So it was just amazing to show what it really is like to be a woman, to give birth, while the guy just stands there.
Okay. Should I be ripping up sheets, boiling water?
Yes,
pacing?
Yes.
Yeah. It explains their characters so well, too, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely Shia LaBeouf's character, because, man, what ends up happening is, because again, you get to see the entire, like, the labor sequence and then the birth itself. And let's just say, not to go into spoilers or anything, but tragedy does occur, which you could probably guess. But it's the rest of the movie is about the repercussions of that. And also, we need to add is that there is a midwife that is called in to assist with the labor itself, but she's not the regular midwife. And so right there, there starts to have like this kind of subtext of like a little conflict or tension that's being brought in just by simple lines that are delivered, or just reaction to the idea that another midwife's coming in, where Vanessa Kirby or Martha's character, or Martha, is uncomfortable with that. Like, where's my regular midwife? Like, what's happening? Mm-hmm. And then this new one's coming in, and she gets there on time, and everything is still running smoothly, but it has this air of unease throughout that first scene. And on top of the fact that it's all one shot, because, like,
yes,
you need it. What they're trying to portray is that this is pivotal. This is all that's happening right now. You need to pay attention to every single detail. And I was just on the edge of my seat watching every single frame, making sure I wasn't missing anything, because I knew like something really bad was going to happen, and the way that it was going to show it was going to be that much more powerful and interesting.
Interesting. I didn't assume that anything bad was going to happen, actually. That's why I wouldn't call it a spoiler. Well, yeah, I won't speak on it because I wasn't predicting anything, but this is the strong, this scene and the courtroom scene where the character's arc is fulfilled in telling her truth, to me, were the strongest scenes, as in for the filmmaker, the director themselves. That you can tell that they're, the director and the writer and the editor were all on the same page, which is beautiful when that happens, because we are able to get so much information about the mother who was absent but seems to want to be entitled to blaming her daughter for something that happens in childbirth. Like how you said, it sets up the two characters' dynamics and the way that they interact and the aloofness. That's why I said Shia LaBeouf is a Virgo male. Okay. Because that earth sign aloofness, that I'm calm, like super, super calm, but are you really emotionally engaged? And then her going through birth and just seeing her resiliency and the fact that she goes through all these ups and downs, but you kind of see her step into it. And I like the fact that they didn't make her out to be someone who didn't want to have kids or wanted to have kids. She straddled the line very well in being a very, just being human and being able to allow herself to, very realistic. So just the fact that the writing and the directing of that scene set the tone for the entire film of what we were to expect of the characterization of the folks in this film was done very well. This is the most, I think, technically competent and beautifully shot film, even though it's very minimalist in the setting, and it's not, you know, it's not a big production, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. So that's my spiel.
Alex, what did you think about they do introduce you know, the rest of the family and like how they're all dealing with the tragedy, let's say. But what did you think about Ellen Burstyn, who plays Vanessa Kirby's mother?
Well, at first, during that long, nearly 30-minute sequence, I was like, oh, okay, another movie where Ellen Burstyn's daughter screams and snarls for an entity to be removed from her body. It's been a while. But then, like, even as early on as when they pick up their car, and Benny Safdie shows up out of nowhere,
which is crazy. Some of the cameos in the movie, like Eliza Schlesinger, I forget the comedian's name.
Schlesinger?
She plays the sister. Yeah, I was like, what the shit? What is she doing in this movie?
Yeah, I got super excited when Jimmy Fail showed up out of nowhere too. Yeah, right away. The dynamic between Ellen Burstyn and Shia LaBeouf is so tense, and you can feel how much each of them greatly dislikes the other.
Yeah. This, what this movie does really well is a lot of like passive aggressive acting where they are not outright saying what they feel about things, which I guess to even your point, Gina, the very end of the scene where the main character speaks her truth, no one is really, everyone's like kind of tap dancing around the truth of like what their characters are all about for the most part. Mm-hmm. And they'll show it in some actions, just like, and because the camera will focus on like little details of just like eye rolling or just like brushing off someone or something like that. You're just like, it says so much with like just a little thing like that. And the camera really wants you to make sure that you're looking at those actions. It's so well directed and well written that way.
I was going to say, yeah, that's kudos to the director and the cinematographer, you know, again, being on the same page. This is very much when you have a team that works well together, and I hope they do more films together tackling different topics. But this also is a kudos to the writing, where, you know, it makes sense that these are probably non-American filmmakers and writers, because they don't rely on the typical emotional devices and storytelling that we see in films where everyone is completely unlikable. That is not the case here. Everyone does something that is not the greatest, but they're also fully human. So we can't sit up there and judge them, because we can understand where they're coming from. So it makes it easier to allow them to set this stage for this character study, which is interesting because it very much reminded me of a play, which I come to find out it was a play.
It was a play? Really?
Yes, this was a play, yeah. And so it makes sense because each of these characters are written, it reminded me of all the theater plays that I've done, where
each character
is kind of like an archetype of, you know, this is how we don't handle trauma, okay? But they represent archetypes of, you know, our parents that we interacted with, you know, the capitalism that we were all raised with, all these different things. But they don't make, the writing is so good that they don't make it so obvious. And they don't also, like, lean on it as an emotional crutch. Like, oh, yeah, here's the mom who's mean and evil. You know what I mean? They flesh out their characters equally across the board, to where it's like, all right, she's a bitch, but she's also an aging old woman who has Alzheimer's. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and Yeah, this movie is like amazing. I think it's great. I think it's definitely my top 10 best films of 2021 already.
Yeah, I almost wish we got to see this in 2020, because I think this would have easily been the top 3 movies of last year. But it was interesting. I kept on thinking about this, how there are some movies like this that it's about a very specific situation, and it's not like it's happened to other people like too many times. It's like it's not necessarily a generalized like tragedy where people like can really, I mean, people can connect with it, but it's not like it's happened to them. And it's like, it's something that's happened multiple times where people see that, and it's how these specific characters with already their history are reacting to the situation. And it feels so refreshing, even if there are, you know, the normal tropes of like kind of an overbearing mother, or like an alcoholic husband, or this woman who's kind of put in the middle of the situation, not knowing what to do, and no one's really listening to her, what she wants to do. But because of the situation, how it drives everything, it's so interesting how it's portraying all these different types of characters, and even some of these tropes that we've seen before. Before we get into final thoughts, Bradley, what did you think about, we talked a little bit before we started recording, but there is this fantastic monologue that Ellen Bernstein gives at this dinner sort of scene, and God almighty, I don't want to go into it like what I thought about it, but Bradley, what did you think about that?
Well, she's an incredibly wealthy woman, and you can see throughout the movie she's not used to not being in control of every aspect of her life, which makes her Alzheimer's even more tragic. And this isn't Hollywood Alzheimer's. This is, like you were saying, Gina, someone who genuinely comes across as dealing with this actual condition. Like, there's not going to be a plot point where it's like, where did Mom go? She wandered off to a gas station. We better go get her and say some Hallmark taglines along the way. You know, nothing like that. None of that nonsense. But this movie was already tremendously sad. I don't know if I could have finished it without I'm the sap sobbing during First Man when they're lowering a tiny casket into the ground. And that's what, the first 10 minutes? I'm like, I can't do it. I don't care. I already know he goes to the moon. But that does pay off well, though. I'm glad I finished that movie. And she gives this horrifying history of her own little tiny upbringing, and it's awful and horrible, and the movie's already sad enough, and that stayed with me so long after she finished, and I'm like, whoo, why would you say that to your daughter, though? But then that pays off as well. So you got to really roll with the punches of this, and I'm glad I was able to finish it.
Speaking of rolling, the eye rolling from Gina.
I will say this before my final thoughts, because I do have some issues with this film, which are minor, because I think it was a lot of the studio that was like, hey, this is American audiences, let's put some shitty soundtracks in here. And it was like, oh, girl, child, can we not?
Oh, the music is what you had an issue with?
Yeah. Interesting. Not only did it not fit the tone of the film, because like, this film reminded me, just a quick side note, of The Sound of Music, which I think, or is it The Sound of Music, the newer film that came out where the drummer loses his hearing?
Oh, The Sound of Metal, yeah.
The Sound of Metal, thank you, yeah. Thank you.
Maybe Ellen Bernstein's backstory, The Sound of Music, but
the music in there was intentional, but it didn't have a real big soundtrack, and I like that, because it grounded the film even more. And with this film, the music actually took me out, because it just didn't fit. It sounded very like 90s type of like Sleepless in Seattle. It just didn't fit really the moments of the film, and I felt like they could have used less music in the film at certain points, where it was like, all right, we already know the emotional, like the emotional plotting and blocking of this scene. We don't need the music. Thank you. But other than that, we'll just go back to the mom in that specific scene. I really am glad that they got that actress to do that, because she is so skilled in gaslighting, but also the writing is so good that you walk off just like the character did, because it's like, this is my mother. I'm pretty sure this is all true, but she's using it to get her daughter to do something that she needs to do. But because she doesn't have the tools to do it in a healthier way, this is the way that she does it. And although it helps her, it's still a traumatic experience, and she's also still implementing said trauma. And it's like, regardless of race, for me personally, my mother did this to me. Like, my mother was like that. And it really triggered me. But it was just so good because it just shows how, for real, family abuse isn't always cursing at you or physically hitting you. Sometimes right. It's stuff like this. And, like, for me, it is a generational thing because my mom is, you know, she's up there. She's not as old as, you know, the lady in here, but she's up there. And that is a generational thing where they don't talk about their problems, or they'll use their traumas to be like, but I came out on top, right? Pull yourself up from your bootstrap, right? Like this mentality where it's like, you just handle the trauma and move on. And her daughter is literally the antithesis of that. Her daughter represents regeneration, healing. You move on, but you move on in a way where you truly heal. And she's breaking generational curses. So it was just like really great how that she did a great job as the mother. Because I did want to just slip that bitch some cyanide in her tea and be like, peace the fuck out, old ass bitch. Make sure
not poor Ellen Bernstein.
Ironically enough, there's a lot of cyanide in apple seeds.
Oh, ooh. Well, Alex, let's go into final thoughts. And Alex, what are your final thoughts for Pieces of a Woman?
I thought this movie was beautiful. It made me cry by the end of it. And then I cried again when doing research and found out that this happened to the director and the writer in real life.
Are you serious?
What?
Yeah, they were writing from their own experience. Yeah, I cried before this review. I was like, fuck, man. Movies that try to cover subjects like this can sometimes be manipulative and mopey. And this one was so authentic and raw, and it was beautiful. And I love the motif of the apple seeds throughout the movie and what that comes to fruition, I guess. I'm going to give this 9 out of 10 apple seeds.
Damn, I was going to use that.
Suck it.
Gina, your final thoughts, please, of Pieces of a Woman.
Again, kudos, more than kudos to the writer and director. As a mother watching this, it was extremely triggering as, you know, perceived as a woman. This really liberated me in a way where the director and writer were able to tackle pretty much what it's like to be a woman and to be a mother and to be able to give birth and deal with the traumas that come with that, as well as being in your mid-30s and thinking that you wanted something so bad and then you got it and then it didn't end up being the way you wanted. And it's extremely, it just hit so many notes in a way where it wasn't like how Alex said, it didn't pander to the point where it was like, oh, look, you should cry right now at this scene. It didn't do that at all.
Yeah.
Because it's speaking truth. It's their truth. It's her story. It's their story. And the care and just the attention to detail is something that I truly appreciated. And like I said, regardless of age, race, or what have you, everyone can watch this movie and take something away that makes you look at yourself and your life and your family and your children, or even your identity, in a way where it's like, damn, this actually like really shifted my perspective on life in general. And this movie I'll be watching again and again because it just brought up so many questions in my mind every time I watched it. And I did cry also. It's a very good film. The writing is really well. They could have did without the soundtrack. But again, I think that was a studio choice to try to appeal to American audiences. And Shia, apart from all the controversy in the news, he fine as fuck in this movie. I'm sorry. He had that beer. Had that beer going, and he was just all gruffy and just and damaged. That is my type of white boy. It's a damaged, bearded, fine ass white boy.
Building bridges.
My rating is My rating is 10 out of 10 shots of alcohol that Shia took, and I was really sad that he relapsed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. Kudos to also writing about dealing with addiction and being a male and mental health and not being able to express yourself emotionally.
And then having to play that character.
Yes, he did an amazing job. Yeah, he did an amazing job. Shia, goddamn, stop fucking up, please.
Speaking of fucking up, Bradley, what are your final thoughts?
It's good. It's a hard watch. I probably won't watch this again for a long time. You know, I've known people who have lived through this situation. I'm so relieved that this film shows grief as something that comes in waves, not something that you'll get over by the end and have a cup of yogurt and everything's going to be okay. Those are feel good, and there's nothing wrong with feeling good, but that's all nonsense. You know, these type of things come in waves, and sometimes the waves knock you on your ass. Vanessa Kirby's loneliness in dealing with her grief, I've never seen that before on film. Usually, like, a best friend flies in from Chicago and is like, you gotta get your groove back or something.
Facts! But, yes.
And she's so self-aware of it. It's just a transcending performance. Is she... probably should give her all the awards. I don't know. I like Amanda Seyfried too, but this is her year, I think. Vanessa, I can't wait to see her again. So I'm going to give this, again, listen to people who have stories to tell if they're suffering from a tragedy. Don't fix them. Thank you, movie, for not doing that bullshit. The mother tried to fix her daughter, and you're right. That was horrible to listen to and very sad, and I'm glad I made it to the end of this. That surprised me. I almost turned it off, but I'm glad I didn't. Because I don't handle grief well, I guess. Self-reflection. Gonna give this, end it on a jokey note. Let's go 8 out of 10 inches of Shia LaBeouf ass.
Mm-hmm. Only the ass? No.
Only the ass, yeah.
He is so fine.
Oh, the other nude was so classy. I'm surprised that was even a controversy at all.
I really did love this movie, and I've been excited about it since I heard about it from the earlier last year with the Venice Film Festival, and you know, just a lot of the buzz behind it. But one of the things I think we also, like Bradley, you were touching on as well, the way that it conveys Vanessa Kirby's grief. One of the more like subtle things that they did that I just remember when you were talking about that is the passage of time that they show. Is that it's funny how they have it's almost like chapters that it says a specific date, no year. It's just like October 17th or whatever it is, and it's these arbitrary dates that they show as these chapters, but it's long enough to where you're seeing that it's been months and months since this tragedy did occur. And you're seeing the evolution of how they're dealing with this situation and this grief. And it's, again, so realistic and so well thought out how they're hopefully going to come to some resolution. And in a lot of ways, the way that it ends up resolving in, you know, a great scene where Vanessa Kirby really gets to shine in just like this fantastic monologue. And maybe in a lot of ways it's unrealistic because the resolution happens so quickly because of such an intense thing that did happen, and to kind of get over that grief. But it's not necessarily she's getting over it right then. It's just she is realizing that she can get over it, or that she will move on at some point, and she can move forward. Maybe she'll hold on to that grief for the rest of her life, but she can hold it, and she can carry that, even though that she might not be able to carry anything else right at that moment. But what also does occur is that there is this kind of coda that we don't need to speak about, but it does show something that that I thought it was extremely powerful, and it was way more artistic the way that it portrays the situation, because it doesn't really paint it very clearly of what is actually occurring, but it shows that she is going to be okay, which I thought was so well done, the way that it was done. Anyway, I loved it. I love the direction. I love the soundtrack and the score. but I will agree with Gina's score, though. I'm going to give this 10 out of 10. You know, it's funny. 10 out of 10 Oscars that Ellen Bernstein should already have, but she only has one. Anyway, but also Vanessa Kirby, I guarantee it, she's going to win an Oscar for this movie. I guess maybe next year or something. I don't know what the Oscars are doing now. I don't know how they're going to deal with COVID right now. So maybe Bad Boys for Life is going to win Best Picture. Who knows?
Get the fuck out of here. Hey, get the fuck. And I love me some Will Smith, but not today.
If he didn't win for Bright, then God only knows.